When you're on the go and it's time to refresh your energy, grab an ice-cold Celsius, where zero sugar, seven essential vitamins, and proven ingredients meets pure refreshment. Unlike traditional energy drinks, each sip of Celsius is a perfect balance of flavor and function. So whether you're hitting the gym, the office, or your next adventure, grab a Celsius at your local retailer or visit Celsius.com to learn more.
Go loud.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your whip in the snow. Tell your body a tent. Walk it hard and slow. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.
We've a bit of an extra treat lined up for you all to ease the fare after the bank holiday weekend.
That's right. We've teamed up with Tesco. It's for, can't argue with that. This is a bonus coming out this Wednesday, and we're getting into some serious arguments to try and settle your arguments about the major issues.
Like splitting your sausage, down the big shop, or whether a door is on or off if it's closed.
Don't get me started. So listen now for an extra help in the talking more bollocks this Wednesday, thanks to Tesco. Can't argue with that. It's a belter.
Episode 220 of the Talking Bollocks podcast, brought to you by Go Loud. It's me, COB.
It's me, Tardy Flower.
And today we're joined by...
Jerry Hussey.
Jerry, welcome back. It's been a while.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I think the last time I saw you was live in the National Stadium for your live event.
Bollocks, yeah. 2,000 people shadow boxing.
Yeah, it was great fun, yeah.
Yeah, it was, yeah. I didn't think you'd get 2,000 people up or everybody was up.
Yeah, yeah, they did. It was great energy and great fun, and but it was an amazing night, so great credit to you. Apart from that, it was great conversations and... I wasn't sure how the event would work.
Yeah.
But it was a great credit to you, the crowd that was there, and a great credit to the conversations that you managed to pull out of people. I thought it was a really great night. Yeah. And I kind of went as a bit of a skeptic, but it was a really special night, so thank you.
The mad crowds, aren't they, Jerry? It's like, it's a weird thing because they're all drinking, they're all there to have a good night, but as soon as you sit down and start having a conversation with someone, they're quick to just sit there and actually listen. Like, it's like, for me, it'd be hard for me to switch the chaos off because they're up singing 1 minute and then the next minute it's like, right, we're going to sit down and chat to a guest and they're just all ears.
I think, I always say, if you speak to real people about real things that really matter, people listen. If you're on stage and you're trying to waffle and bluff, you're not going to keep it. Mm. And I think on the night, you know, you just being yourselves. And I think that captures people. And no more than me coming out, I wasn't too worried about what do I need to say or how do I entertain the crowd. I was just like, what do I want to say?
Yeah.
And I think people relate to that. So you can have different crowds, but ultimately people like real conversations. And if you think, talk things about dealing with tragedy, dealing with adversity, dealing with mental health, and you do it in an honest way, that connects with everybody.
Yeah.
And even if they've had a few pints or not, they're real conversations and you just cut straight through the noise and you cut through the bullshit. And most people, whether they want to admit it or not, there's something they want to deal with or something they want help with, something they want to. And I think that's what you want to just plug into. It's just cut the bullshit. This is a great conversation. It's not going to last forever. And for the next 5 minutes, you get a chance to hear two people speak raw and honestly and open about something that really matters. I think that appeals to everybody.
Yeah. We actually have another live show coming up on July the 11th in the Bord Gáis. So if you haven't got tickets yet, get your tickets. We're going to have to change her up for that one.
Yeah.
We've a few plans, Jerry.
Amazing.
A few tricks up the sleeve there. So we need to make use of the tools that are on offer in the Bord Gáis.
Yeah. Well, I'm available for selection, lads. So don't forget me, like.
Yeah. Now, the last time I seen you, Jerry, was down in Cork. Mm. At one of your Soul Space events. Mm-hmm. And you dragged me up on the stage with you.
Soul Sunday, yeah, we got up on the stage, that's right.
It was fucking great. That's what, I've been to 3 or 4 of your events. I was just saying to you off here there, like about, do you get nervous before the events? You don't you?
I don't, no. And the reason I don't is I've given up worrying about what people think of me. And I've given up worrying about what people expect from me. I've developed something over the last year since, you know, you're looking at a kid that had 2 suicide attempts before he was 14. And I know what works, I know it doesn't work. Does it work for everybody? I'm not sure. But I know the system I've developed works for me. And I've developed this idea in life that life is short and time is precious. And I've no interest in being anything other than the best version of who I believe I can be. And if I can walk up on stage with honesty and passion and joy if people don't agree with what I'm saying, that's fine. If they don't like the way I do, that's okay. But I have to be me. I have to do my events my way. And I believe that in an event, we got to change people's biology, their chemistry, the neural circuitry of the brain, and their frequency. And how do you do that? You do that by changing the frequency in the room. So I see myself going on stage as a lightning bolt. And I'm there to make people feel something. And I've often had people come who are journalists in national media, and they come as skeptics. And they're going to come and a week later write an article slating me and slating the work I do. And it's happened a few times, and it's always ended in the same way. They'll write the article, and they'll be honest and say, I bought a ticket, but I came as a skeptic with the intention of slating, but I can't deny what I felt.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm about. It's about making people feel something. And particularly for people who have lost the way or are anxious or depressed, and they've only known one way of feeling, which is down or sad or just out of energy. And you can hit them with an electricity, a voltage. And in that day, you transform and you change them. And they realize, I can still laugh. I can still sing. I can still move. I thought I was the shyest person in the room, but I'm up on the stage. I'm dancing. I'm singing. I'm screaming. I'm chanting. And what I want to prove to people that most of the stories you're telling yourself, they're just stories. I have anxiety. I have depression. I'm not confident. I can't dance. I'm no good. Who's saying that story? What if you were to change your story? And you've got to change frequency. So that's why I bring this high energy in. That's why you get people up moving. And there's a lot of science behind it. Because when we change your frequency, you make their nervous system, when we're at high stress, we're in fight, flight, or freeze. And what I do is I create an energy that shifts their nervous system out of that. And now they start to feel. And there's people there that are laughing that haven't laughed in years. There's people dancing that haven't danced in years. I had one couple come recently and the husband said, you know, he didn't want to come. He said, fuck's sake, I'm going to go. But if he starts making us box or dance or chant, I'm fucking out of there. And she sent me a lovely message afterwards. And she said, at one point I turned and he was up boxing and screaming and crying. Because most of us have so much pent up inside of us. Fear, anxiousness, worry. And what I want to do is create an environment where people can let that out through chanting and screaming. And the science behind this is there's incredible science that's thousands of years old. But most of our life, we're told, be quiet, sit down, stay who you are. So that's what my events are. They're a chance for me to probably do 100 therapy sessions in one day and get people, when they walk out the door saying, fuck, I feel different. I feel different. And now that I know I can feel different, if I can follow that simple process every day, I can feel different every day.
Jerry, the work that you do, it affects a diverse group of people from like sports stars, corporate, even everyday life. What's the one common thing then that all those people have if you're able to apply that to them?
The one word that I try to give people, so like if you work with an Olympic champion, world champion, you know, that's the easy part. You're working with someone that has just lost a heavyweight title fight. That's easy. You just go back and try again. Sport is the easy part. If you're sitting in front of a mum and she's 32 with three young kids and she's just found out she's 6 months to live, that's not so easy. Or you're sitting in front of somebody who has just lost their child. How in the hell can I help those people? Firstly is, I don't try to change them. Every human being has the right to be angry and bitter. And I have to firstly create a space where those people can be angry and bitter and fall apart. Because the whole world is falling apart. So firstly, I give them space. And I don't speak. And sometimes I bring them into the boxing gym and they just punch bags because they're angry at everything. Sometimes they bring them up the mountains and they just scream and cry and fall apart. And we all at times, everybody always feels, I have to hold it together. And sometimes if it's a parent, they feel, I have to hold it together for my other children. But sometimes we have to fall apart. So firstly, I let them fall apart. And then it gets, so whether after losing your world title, whether after not qualifying for the Olympics, or whether you've been told you're 6 months to live, it all comes down to the same thing. What's the choice you're making now? So if you only have 6 months left to live, what would you like to experience more of? And in order to experience more of that, what do you need to let go of? So maybe I need to let go of anger and judgment and comparison. What I try to do is give people a sense of empowerment where I'm not a victim anymore. And whether life is going exactly as I wanted it or not, as long as I stay stuck in the past, as long as I stay attached to my trauma, as long as I stay angry, as long as I stay stuck in this victim mode, I can never do anything else. So what I do with all my clients is first let them be how they need to be and let them fall apart. No human emotion is wrong. And then secondly, you slowly get them back where they start making choices. And that choice is, I want to experience more joy, more love, more peace. I'm not a victim anymore. I'm letting it all go. And I'm working with some amazing people at the moment. And one person that I'm helping, you know, has come to a point in her life where she realizes from now on it's about peace. She doesn't necessarily know how long more she has to live. But what she knows is, in that time, I'm going to experience incredible peace and joy and love, and I'm going to live it on my terms. And the problem is, for too many of us, it takes a crisis or a diagnosis for us to wake up. We worry sometimes, and the stuff that fills our head, it doesn't even matter. Our car breaks down, or we lose our job. That's not, when you think of the big stuff. So my work is meeting people exactly where they are, accepting the pain and trauma that people have to carry, giving them the tools to deal with that, and then getting back to a choice where the diagnosis is not the story. The story will be how I responded to the diagnosis. Losing the heavyweight title is not the story. What I did when I lost the heavyweight title, that's the story. And I think every single one of us has an incredible story. But the story has to be in our response. We can't always control what happens to us in our life. There's pain in life. But we can be powerful in the face of pain. We can be free in the face of pain. And even in the most remarkable adversity, I have witnessed human beings do something extraordinary. And long after the event has passed, or long after their life has passed, the story is about the way they responded. They inspired, they mesmerized. And we all have that power. And my job is to help people who are healthy and happy to wake up faster and ask, are you really prioritizing the right thing? Is this really the life you're looking at? And in all that could happen in any given moment, if it was to end today, would you have regrets? And if the answer is yes, then write those regrets down and make it your business to go after them and get them done right. So what's the common theme? They all come to me knowing that I can't make the pain go away. I can't change the diagnosis. I can't change what's after happening. But maybe I can help them become empowered to make an incredible decision. And that's what I want everyone to hear. We all have the ability. Whatever happens, that's not the story. The story is how you responded to it. I think that's a gift. And I've witnessed the most amazing things happen in the most amazing people.
I think the very first time we had you on this podcast, Jerry, you said something that really stuck with Calvin. And I know this because Calvin has said this back to many guests after you. And it was about, in the morning, everybody has a chance or a choice.
Chances and choices.
Choices. Yeah.
And that's really resonated with you, hasn't it?
I've recycled that back so many times, Jerry, and I've even said it to people like one-to-one, you know. I don't know what it was, but when you said it to me, just the imprint that it's hit me. If you wouldn't mind even just reciting and going through that.
Yeah, so, you know, in my book I talk about a victory mindset or a victim mindset, and I don't mean to dismiss people by saying a victim, but victory is choosing your response. And every single morning you wake up, whether you know it or not, there's two gifts beside your bed because you've woken up. You're still alive and you have an ability to make an impact. Now, the question is, what impact do you want to make? So you have a choice. The choice is, do I get up? Do I exercise? Do I journal? Do Do I cold water immersion? Do I chant? Do I sing? Do I dance? Do I tell myself I am, I can, I will? Do I look myself in the mirror like Rocky Balboa, you know, when he says to Tommy Gunn, hey, Tommy, I ain't hear no bell. How about one more round? And for a guy that has dragged himself through the depths of anxiety and depression, and sometimes still have to, sometimes you got to wake up and you got to look in the mirror and say, one more round. I'm going one more shot at this. So every morning we have a choice about what we do, about the words we use, what we listen to, what we read, what we speak about, the food we eat. That's a choice. And every morning we have a chance to see the sunrise, a chance to fall in love, a chance to make this day matter, and a day to a chance to have an impact on the world. You wake up in the morning, you make a choice. You can scroll on the phone if you want. You can scroll through Instagram for an hour. You can eat processed food, drink coffee, be miserable, listen to the bad news. That's your choice. And then the chances are disappeared. So you wake up in the morning, that first 15 minutes is the rudder for the day. That sets the tone. And if you wake up in those 15 minutes and you allow your nervous system to go into stress mode, you allow yourself to start thinking you're a victim, you start telling yourself the poor me stories and this isn't fair, your whole nervous system, your central, your reticular activating system in the brain is now telling yourself, I'm a victim, this isn't fair, I'm angry, and life is miserable. That's okay, but that's your choice. Do I wake up every morning happy and excited? No. But the choice is, do I stay in that emotion or not? And we know from science that we have the ability to change any emotion. We can change our biology, we can change our chemistry, we can change our neurocircuitry, we can change our cell and gene expression through thought and activity. So if you feel down and you feel anxious, that's okay. I feel like that regularly. I feel overwhelmed. The choice is, do you wish to stay there or not? So you got to go every morning, go to the well, go to the gym, go outside, get on your yoga mat and change. Change biology, change frequency. There's a lovely expression that says, if you're not actively changing it, you're choosing it. So listen to the words you're using. Listen to what you're speaking about. Are you focused on what you don't have in life? Or are you focused on what you do have in life? Are you focused on what you can't control? Or are you focused on what you can control? Look at your food choices. Look at your exercise choices. And when you look at healthy, happy, confident people, the lie that most people tell themselves is they're naturally like that. Probably not. The people that are healthy and happy and strong probably work really, really hard at it. But a lot of people like to tell themselves, oh, it's natural talent. Cristiano Ronaldo is naturally talented. Spend a week with him. See his work rate. See his food choices. See his sleep choices. So I think we wake up in the morning. You got to ask yourself, who am I? You got to ask yourself, what do I stand for? And you got to ask yourself, what's the impact in the world I'm going to have today? And in order for me to have that, who do I need to be? What do I need to be thinking about? What do I need my body to feel like? And then go do that. Is it always easy? No. But the gift of not being a victim, the gift of walking around with a clear mind and an open heart, and the gift of looking at a mountain or looking at a challenge and saying, let's go. And it's like going in a ring. You're saying, I might get knocked out here. I got knocked out loads of times. But you're looking in and saying, fucking knock me out if you want to. But I'm not going to get in the ring. And I'm not going to give this a shot. It's a bit like David Allen at the weekend.
Yeah.
He went in with no fear. And he just said, I have nothing to lose here. He's after changing his life. If you take fear out of it and you take excuses out of it, who's actually holding you back? And I think your guys, you're examples of this. You've transformed your life. So if you say, I am where I am because of where I grew up, or because of my school, or because of my dad, or because of my mum, then you're a victim. I am why I am the way I am because of them. Then you're saying that your power belongs with them. In the fight, Chris Eubank and Conor Benn, somebody asked Chris Eubank Jr., do you hate Conor Benn? And his answer was, why would I give him that power over me? I'm not holding any anger to him. Because if you're angry at someone, you're emotionally attached to them. If you're angry at someone, they're holding power over you. He had no emotion to Conor Benn because he was saying, I'm just focused on me. And I'm focused on what I want and who I am and what I believe and what I stand for. Ben can be who he wants to be. And I think that's people don't like when I say that to them. Because people sometimes like to believe that they are the way they are because of their past and because of their teachers. And sometimes they want to sit in front of me and they want me to say, poor you. I don't believe in poor you. I have no interest in poor you. I believe in so what? So what? So what are you going to do now? So what do you stand for now? And if I witness people who have lost children stand up and say, right, I'm going to fucking make a difference. If they can say that, then what are most people hanging around for? And if you're not here to do something massive in the world, and if you're not here to change the world, what are you here for? And all I'm saying to people is, just don't blame other people. Don't give other people, even the biggest asshole in the world, don't give them any power. Just let them go. The person that has lied to you, betrayed you, let them go. Don't even think about them. Focus on your lane. Focus on your power. Focus on what you want. Make the choices that are in line with what you want. If you want to be fit and strong and healthy and calm, you got to make those decisions every day. And you got to stop giving your energy and awareness and attention to everything that depletes you and everything that makes you feel not enough and everything that sucks the life out of you. So it's about your soul. What makes your soul come alive? And like someone said to me the other day, Jerry, like in all the work you do, I think you just steal lines from the Rocky movies. And I probably do. But you know what? Isn't Rocky's life?
It works.
It works. Life isn't straightforward. And we get knocked down. And sometimes we think we can't get back up. But you take a deep breath. Just try to stand up and see what happens. I love that line in boxing. You're not beaten when you get knocked down. You're only beaten when you decide you're not getting back up. And to see people find their feet again, to see people stand up and to roar and say to the universe, I'm not fucking done yet. I'm not done yet. There is something else left inside of me. There is a dream. There is a vision. I am not saying no to me. I'm saying yes to me. I'm saying yes to life. Will it be straightforward? No. And you have to wake up that inner lion or that inner lioness. You have to wake that up every morning and say to the universe, you want to fight? You want to battle? You've picked the right person because I'm ready for this. But you got to get yourself ready. And that's why I train. That's why I meditate. That's why I read. That's why I do the work I do. Because if I didn't, I'd just be overwhelmed by everything that goes on in life. I hope that makes sense.
It does, yeah.
Hey, makes sense.
We've had plenty of people sitting in front of us, Jerry, who have told us stories and they've came back from the lowest lows, like lower than I thought any human could ever come back from. And I think you have to summarise that there perfectly.
Mm.
Like I'm trying to think of all the guests we've ever had on. And there is a common thread. Now, don't get me wrong, some are more extreme than you that, but the comeback story that people have had, you know, they've been written off.
Mm.
Now, I don't mean like just in sport, I mean in life in general.
Of course.
I know they'd be looking at them and not telling the story and I'm like, how are you even sitting in front of me?
I know.
Telling the story. And I think you've summarised that perfectly there.
And I think those big moments that change momentum are sometimes as little as I'm putting my runners on and I'm going for a 100-metre walk. That's a start. Or I'm going to AA meetings. Or I'm going to a therapist. Or it's just changing something. And it doesn't matter how small it is. You're making a statement, I'm changing. And when you listen to, and I've listened to nearly all your podcasts, amazing stories, it gets to this critical moment. And sometimes it's at rock bottom. You have to make a decision, I'm staying here or I'm not. And if you're not actively changing it, you're choosing it, I said earlier. So sometimes for the person that hasn't trained in 20 years and they're overweight, put on your runners and go for a 100-metre walk in the morning and come back and say, I fucking did it. And then say, tomorrow I'm going for 110 metres. So it doesn't matter how small. What is the thing that you've been putting off? And it's probably the thing that terrifies you most. But that's what I have to step into. There's a saying that says, at the place of our greatest emotional fear is our greatest emotional healing. So if you think that going to a therapist is the most terrifying thing on the planet, go. If you think that putting on the runners, you got to go. You got to overcome that fear. But in a small way. So make tiny changes and make those little changes every week, and acknowledge every change. So go out for the 100-metre walk. Go back and say, I did it. That's incredible. So these small changes are something small that when life has been going in one particular direction for 20 years, you just do something that stops it. And it might even change the direction of your life at that moment, but it just stops it. You just, I'm not going back. I'm not going back anymore. I'm not following that story anymore. I've enough of that. I've enough of that story. I've enough of that belief. I've enough of that feeling. And I'm going to do one little thing today, just one little thing to stop it. And it's like in boxing. You have a guy that's coming at you. Sometimes you have to dig in and you hit him with everything you have for about 30 seconds and he's not going back, but you've stopped him. And now you're not going back anymore. And if you can stay in there just long enough, he's going to start going back. And now you've turned the tide. Now you've created a total change in direction. But that might take a week, that might take a month, that might take a year of tiny little habits, but you've got to be consistent. So no more 21-day ideas. Be consistent. And even if it takes 6 months, if you dig in with that new mission, you'll turn the tide. And in a year's time, somebody will say, you've changed incredibly, completely. And you look in the mirror and say, I fucking have. I can't believe I used to think like that. I can't believe I used to eat like that. And they'll say, what was the moment you changed? And you're like, I can't remember. So the rate of change can be so slow that we hardly notice day by day. But in a year's time, those tiny changes every day are massive changes. Just a little more.
Jerry, I think your story is incredible about where you've been in life. You mentioned earlier there was suicide attempts, you're depressed, anxious all the time. And you're here today, you meditate every day, you exercise every day, you eat good every day, and you try your best every day. I know you're saying consistency got you there, but what advice would you give to some? Because we've many listeners who message us all the time, and they talk about like, oh, how a certain episode helped them when they heard a guest was in a certain place, and now they're happy. Mm. And we've many listeners who are depressed, anxious, yeah, and they don't know where to go. Where would you tell them to start? I know you've mentioned little bits here and there, yeah, and just consistency, but how would you get somebody to start?
I would say the first thing is to recognize what anxiety or what stress is. It's a nervous system response. You're not born with it. There's nothing wrong with you. Your brain isn't broken. You can take 100 people with anxiety or depression, do brain scans, and the brain's perfectly normal. So sometimes we get so familiar with being angry or depressed or anxious, we think it's just the way I am. So the first thing I would say to everybody, if you can understand the science a little bit, you suddenly realize this is changeable. This is caused by something. And that can be a gut imbalance, which has a massive impact on mental health. A lot of mental health issues are actually gut imbalance. So understand your food. Understand that we have a gut brain axis. So changing your food alone makes a massive impact. Then secondly, realize the impact of trauma. We've all had massive traumas in our life, but trauma doesn't have to be a car crash or an aircraft, a crash. The biggest trauma is feeling not good enough. And most addictions, there's a guy, Brian Penny, I think you've had him on, great guy. Yeah. And he said once, I realized I didn't have a heroin problem. I had a trauma problem. It's all trauma, but it's fixable. So whether you're an addict, whether you're depressed, highly anxious, when we understand the science of the nervous system and the science of the brain and how these things impact us, you soon realize it's absolutely changeable. Then the second point is, often we know what to do and how to do, but we don't do it. So if you know what to do and how to do it and you're not doing it, what's missing? What's missing is why. So I'd ask yourself, why would I do this? The first thing that I did was I took a picture of myself when I was 1 year old at my birthday party. And at the time, I had this big head of curly hair, blue eyes. I was just this beautiful little baby. And I got to the point where I used to say horrible things to myself. What the fuck is wrong with you, Jerry? You're fucking depressed. And I said, well, I'm saying that to this little kid. So every morning I used to wake up, I used to take that picture out, had it in my wallet and say, I'm going to fight for you today. I'm going to fucking fight to give you the life that you deserve. And I'd look at them and I'd speak to myself. I know you're in there. And in that picture, I had these beautiful eyes. I know you're capable of smiling because you're laughing in that picture. And it was like, I wasn't doing it for me anymore. I was doing it for that. I was like, that little kid deserves a shot at life. And if I can give him a shot at life by doing something, by going to therapy, by doing all of this stuff, by jumping in an ice tank, by fuck, I'll do it. So I used to promise him every morning, before I go to bed tonight, I will have done everything in my power to make you smile. And then when my own kids came along, and I'm no spring chicken for having young kids, but I had to ask myself a serious question. Firstly, what type of dad do I want to be? So if I want to be loving and calm and present, I need to really work on that. Secondly, the shadows we cast. Every single one of us casts shadows. If you're walking around the house and you're angry and you're bitter and you're distracted, your kids are picking up on that. So I had to ask myself, what is the shit that I'm carrying that I'm not handing down to my children? What are the beliefs? What's the trauma that I'm carrying that I'm not handing down to my children? So this idea was, it ends with me. So whatever I have to do to get rid of that shit, it's not being handed to my children because they don't deserve it. And then the third thing was, I thought about, like, I've a 5-year-old and a 2.5-year-old. It's probably 25 or 30 years till they get married. And I ask myself every single morning, do I want to be at their wedding? And if I'm at the wedding, how do I want to be? The biggest killer of human beings on this planet at the moment is chronic stress. We know that. So if I'm not regularly taking my body out of stress mode, if I'm not exercising, if I'm not meditating, chances are I won't be around for my children's wedding. So every morning I ask myself, I visualize, what would it be like to be there for my son? Because he's older, he might get married first. I see myself kissing him on the cheek and telling him that I love him. And I ask myself, what would it be like the day my son gets married for me not to be there? Now, I have a chance. I'm not saying that if you do everything right, you're definitely going to live forever. We can't deny the science. So it goes back to the question, what's your why? You have to find something to fight for. There has to be something that gets you out of bed in the morning and makes you do the hardest thing, the thing that you least want to do, but you know it's the right thing to do. You have to be able to look at a photograph, or you have to be look at someone and say, I'm doing it for fucking you. Because you were more important than my stories. You were more important than my past. You were more important than my excuses. I'm doing it for you. And for me, it's still my inner self, because I still have that little kid inside me. And what does he want in life? He just wants to be happy and fucking try things. And why not try something? And why not climb mountains? And why not chase life? Because at the end of life, the tragedy of life is not death. The tragedy of life is arriving at the end and realizing we never lived. I want to live. I want to fill the most amount of days with the most amount of life. Moments that terrify me. Moments that just fucking mesmerize me. And all of that comes down to me. So I have to do things every day, often that I don't want to, but when I know why I'm doing them. I know every chance I get to stack the odds in my favor of being the dad that I want to be and being there for my kids when they really need me. Everything I can do every day, that's what I want to do. So it's the why. It's finding that why.
You see, I think a lot of people as well confuse a life, let's say that you live, Jerry, so you're talking about eating good and exercising. I think so many people confuse that with being, oh, that's an effort. Why would I do that? And you're talking about being happy and living longer. And I don't think people really understand how happy it can be when you do all these things instead of looking at them as a chore. Like, if they only tried it for a certain amount of time, like you're saying, consistency, they would understand why people eat healthy, why people train, why people do these things.
But it's not always meant to feel easy. So think of any Olympic champion. Ask them, were you motivated for every training session? No. Most of being a professional athlete is boring, shitty work. You think of most boxers. You see them walking into Wembley Stadium, Madison Square Gardens, and that looks phenomenal. But most of the time, they're just in dingy gyms in the middle of nowhere, training at times. If you're going for the easy life is stay on your phone, eat the shit food, and blame the world. The hard life is getting out of bed every morning and not blaming anybody and looking yourself in the eye. That's the short-term easy, or that's the short-term hard. But if you choose the easy life, you're going to be forced to take the hard look at yourself at the end and realizing, I never fucking lived. I never really went for it. I took the easy way out every single time and I never really found out what I could do. If you take those hard choices on a daily basis, even if you don't win the world title, you'll be at peace. So there's an expression saying, choose your hard. Mm. It's going to be hard one way or the other. If you end up at the end with a whole load of regrets, that's going to be that is the hardest thing you can do. So the greatest risk you can take in life is not taking a risk. So I don't really care if it's easy or not. Is it the right thing? Does it elevate me? Does it give me a chance at winning at the things that matter in life? So I would say to people, do not listen to your emotions. Listen to your principles. If you only do things when you want to do them. Imagine if a boxer only trained when they wanted to train. If they only ate good food when they wanted to eat good food. We got to not listen to our emotions, because our emotions are up and down, up and down, up and down. We got to be aware of them. We got to be mindful of them. But we got to have principles. So if you could write down three things that you know are good for you and do them every day. Most of the time, you won't want to do them. And then sometimes people are looking for, oh, can we spice it up? Can we excite? Sometimes it's a bit boring. Training gets a bit boring. Meditation gets a bit boring. But you're not meant to be excited every day. So if you're constantly looking for the easy way or the quick fix, you're never going anywhere. So I would say to people, suck it up a bit. It's not meant to be exciting every day. And it's meant to be work. It's meant to be hard. It's like when I jump into an ice tank or jump into the sea, I never wake up in the morning and say, you know what I'd love to do today? I'd love to get it. So you got to stop saying, is it hard or easy? If you're looking for the easy life, the easy life usually ends in the hardship at the end, realizing I spent my whole life never actually getting to where I wanted to be. But if you're willing to make those small, hard decisions every day, it becomes very easy at the end. And that's what Anthony Joshua always says. Do the hard things every day. And then the day of the fight is easy because of the hardship done. So it's those big moments in life, whether you win or whether you lose, whether you've turned out to be a great dad or not, if you can look back and say, I did everything I could, that makes life easy. And the most thing we want at the end of our life is no regrets.
But like I was saying there, it does make you happy as well, the hard stuff. So I think that's where people get a bit confused. Is like,
happiness is the hardest thing in the world to be. Mm. And happiness is more important than any world title, any Olympic medal. Sometimes, that's what I'm saying, people think that he's naturally happy.
Yeah.
What do you mean naturally happy?
No one's naturally happy. Everyone lives in the same world. Everyone is, you know. So we have to accept that to be consistently happy, healthy, fit, strong, takes work.
Mm.
But what I ask is, I don't ask, is it hard or easy? Is it worth it?
Mm.
And you ask anyone that's standing on a podium and they've just become Olympic champion or world champion. You ask Dave Allen when he woke up the next morning, was it worth it? Absolutely. Those moments, that's what we're about. So to live a life of extraordinary happiness or success or peace, we must be willing to do hard things. But the ability to do hard things with an easy mindset is what separates the good from the great. So I walk up into an ice tank. I don't like it, but I just jump in and have a laugh anyway. Why not? Because it doesn't matter. The ability to do hard things and still have a smile. It's like the great Kenyan runners. We often think when they're coming in the 10 meter after 10K and the last lap Olympic final, they're all smiling. We all think, God, they're not in agony. They're in absolute agony. But what they've been trained is not to listen to it, to smile through it. Because they put themselves in agony all the time. Mm. If you're in Kenya and you're running in a training group of 20 people and every one of them are the fastest 20 people in the world, you're going to be in pain every day. And they get used to it. So you can become comfortable in the discomfort. You become curious. And they know that if I put myself in a training group where it's easy, I'm probably not going to win anything. So I just want people to know that to overcome anxiety, to overcome depression, to overcome bereavement, it's hard. It's a hard way back. But it's possible. Mm. And when you get there, it's the greatest thing you can give yourself.
Jerry, you strike me as a man who reaps what he sows. I say accountability is very good, very big on your list of principles. You were talking about trying new things to be happy and spicing her up. And speaking about the Kenyan runners, I think that was a nice segue into what we were talking about outside, that you set yourself a new challenge this year.
I was hoping you wouldn't ask because I don't want to say it publicly. But yes, so people know me. I know I love boxing. I love running. My running had slipped a little bit in terms of, I was telling myself I'm a bit old and my knees are a bit sore. And I said, I need to change my environment. So I joined up with a great running club called By the Sea Runners. went down Wednesday and I started running with a group of people and suddenly realized I love it. But I got some good coaching, some good training. And as part of the coaching to speed up my 5K, we started doing 400 and 200 meter sprints. And doing the 200, I was like, God, I like this. There's a feeling here. Jeez, this is unreal. And I realized I was kind of a bit bored of the 5K. But this was new. I said, I want more of that feeling. So next time I asked, could we do a few more sprints? And somewhere in the middle, I had this idea. Jeez, I really like this. I wonder, could I compete for Ireland in the Masters Series? And by the time I finished doing, I said, that's what I'm going to do. I had no idea what time it would take. So at my age group to be a Masters, I had no idea. But I figured there, if I could hit around 25 seconds, that has to be fairly decent time. So I went home for a day or two and I was nearly afraid to tell everyone. I said, I'm mad. Then I said, no, hold on a second, I have to listen to this. So one morning at breakfast, I said to my wife, Miriam, you know, I'm going to do what? I'm going, before the end of the year, I'm going to compete for Ireland in the 200 meter sprint. She said, I started laughing. I said, what? Sprinting? Yeah, sprinting. And she knew. So that's it now. That's my story. I contacted David Gillick and I felt like such a fool. I said, Gillick's going to laugh at me, because no matter how fast I think I am, it's going to be snail pace. But I'm like, well, if you're going to go at this, you're going to do it right and you're going to get the best people around you. So I contacted David Gillick and said, would you give me some coaching? I've already had to put myself in environments. Doing 5Ks, I'm pretty good and I'm pretty strong. And suddenly I'm in a new environment. I'm the slowest on the track. I'm trying to beat 14-year-olds. My hamstrings are killing me. It's made me feel like I'm just nowhere. But I think that's a great thing to do. So now I've had to change my training, I have to change my idea, but I've developed this mindset. So now I'm telling everyone, I'm super fast, I'm lightning fast. I started watching this sprint documentary on Netflix. I'm changing my mindset. And now I'm running and I'm doing more sprint training. And it's amazing, I'm bringing my mindset and I'm changing my training. So it's crazy, but I think regularly, you got to meet a skill deficit. You got to challenge your story. I could never do that. Why not? Why not? Are you sure? And then when I started looking at the times, for me, they're not impossible. Will it take a lot of hard work? Yes. Do I risk getting absolutely blown out of it? Yes. Do I risk blowing my hamstrings? Yes. So instead of saying, what if it doesn't work out? What if it does work out? What if I turn out to say I'm going to do something and do it? And most people I've said it to, the people that know me say, fuck you. I'd like to tell you you're not going to do it, but I know you're going to do it. I know I'm going to do it. How I'm going to do it, I have no idea. How long it's going to take, but I will sit with you guys at some point and I'll tell you that I did 100 metres under 25 seconds.
200 metres.
200 metres. Yeah. Sorry, 200 metres under 25 seconds. And why not? But I got to break it all down physically, technically, tactically, mentally, nutrition, sleep. And I'm going to find those inches everywhere. And because what I do is, whether I've rowed across the Irish Sea, I've climbed the Alps, I'm terrified of heights. I couldn't row. I give myself 9 weeks to learn how to row and row across the Irish Sea. If I regularly take things, and the minute I take it on, it seems absolutely impossible. But if I can break it down and do it, then what I ask myself is, what else am I telling myself is impossible that's actually possible? And I think for most of us, now any good sprinter, any young, fresh sprinter is saying 200 metres in 25 seconds, that slows about a week. But for me, that would be phenomenal. Now, if your time is 30 seconds, or if you're doing a 5K and the 5K is in 2 hours, it doesn't matter. You're not competing against anybody. You're competing against your own self. You're competing against your own doubt and your own excuses. So I'm saying now, I have no excuse. And I've no doubt, but it's going to take a massive effort. And I'm up for it. Not necessarily that I want to be a rower or I want to be a mountain climber or I want to be a sprinter. I want to show myself that I can regularly take a challenge that seems impossible and do it. And then you might realize that what really is impossible. And we might realize that most of the stuff we're telling ourselves is impossible is merely a story in our head. So break it down. Break it into tiny pieces, get your diary organized, get yourself set up, get yourself in the right people. Don't be afraid to look foolish. Don't be afraid. It could go horribly wrong and it could go horribly right. So go in with an open mind.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, people don't realise if you were to try anything for the first time, what are the chances you're going to be good at it? What is the chance you're going to achieve it? Like, if I say to you, try hit a hole in one, or try, I don't know, do a sub 25 5K, and you've never done it before, you don't do it regularly, go do that, and you're like, Jesus, I can't. But then obviously there is a pathway to do that.
Exactly.
And I think it's probably, I don't want to say easier, but there's probably, it's more common when in things like athletics where you'd be like, if you do this and you train this way, this is how we know we can achieve that. But then you can apply that to your everyday life. You know,
exactly.
You if you want to be, if you want to learn a new skill, if you want to learn a new language, if you want to help apply yourself in your job or be a better father, be a better, more present partner, there is ways and means of doing that. And I think even what you were saying there, there is science behind that fake it till you make it mindset, that your brain will start to narrow its vision on being like, now this is what X person does. This is how you be that person. So it's the fake it till you make it kind of thing. And there is, we were talking about last week, there's science behind that.
It's like visions, isn't it?
Yeah. There is a way of doing it. So.
It's the reticular activating system of the brain. And the reticular activating system of the brain is like, it's like Google. So if you type red car for 10,000 euro into Google and you do that every day, suddenly no matter where you go, you get ads. So we know social media works by, if you express an interest in something, if you click like or share something, it identifies the kind of content you want, you get more of that and it gets rid of the stuff you don't want. The reticular activating system of the brain is exactly the same. So if I'm saying I'm not fast, I couldn't do that, then I will only see the things that match that story. But when I start saying other stuff, when I start exposing myself to people who could do it, like I went down and I suddenly realized that there's a guy around my age that can do it in like 23 seconds. And then I realized, actually, this is very possible. And then you realize there's a load of people that can do it under 35 seconds. So when you start looking for people and you start meeting those people, you realize this is possible. And then I met a guy recently and he's like, Jerry, like, this isn't that bloody hard. What are you waffling about? Like, just follow this plan. I'm like, but the plan is really hard. He's like, well, I know, but it's very possible. So when you start to think about it and speak about it and surround yourself with those people, if you're surrounding yourself with people that have never done it, and you're asking, do you think I could do it? They'll all tell you no, but they're telling you what they can do. So you have to literally become almost locked in a room. It's like you become the five people you surround yourself with. Most billionaires have five friends that are billionaires. Most millionaires have five friends that are millionaires. And most broke people's five friends are broke. And that's not just chance. So you got to surround yourself with people who challenge you to say, it's absolutely possible. And if you don't do it, it's probably because you didn't either work hard enough or you didn't follow the process. Now, that's, none of us want to hear that.
No.
None of us want to hear that. So in sometimes in life, you're directly responsible for the success or failure you become. And that's a hard thing to hear. At the end of the year, I'll know two things. I'll know if I was really up for the fight and I know how fast I am. And won't that be magnificent? Whether that's 25 seconds or not, I'll know how fast I can be. I will run faster this year than I've ever ran in my entire life. And if I can do that at this age, then what could I do next year that I've never done before? So we have this thing of, oh, I'm getting old and sure this and that. But the minute you stop trying, the minute you stop living, that's when you start to get age. So the promise I've made myself is I will do something this year that I've never been able to do in my life before. And I'll turn the momentum around and I'll stop the stories of I'm aging and my knees are gone and my poor hamstrings and poor me. No poor me now. And I've put myself around people who have no poor you story and that I come to train with us, follow the process, and you either keep up or you don't. But I think you can keep up. And I think if you work hard enough at this for long enough, you'll keep up. So I think everyone listening to this should set one thing that you've never done before in your life. And say, I'm going to do that. And if that's a sparring session, you were saying about sparring, like, even to go in with someone, you know it's not going to beat you up. They're going to go easy. But to have that experience, to have an experience this year that you've never done before, whether that's running 1 kilometer, whether it's doing 50, it doesn't matter what it is. But this story that as we get older, we slow down and we this and we that. Not really. There's people out there in their 80s running marathons. When you start to look for those examples, they're there. And then you ask, why me? Why not me? Why would I not want to experience that? why would I not want to see what I could do this year? And I think the joy that comes from that, as long as you're not beating yourself up, it's like me, I will do everything I can to hit that time. If I don't hit it, oh, well, I'd be okay. Like, my happiness doesn't depend on it. But giving it a shot, isn't that what it's all about? It's, and you begin to realize, like I said, if I could do this, what else could I do? And it's be like you were saying about the high rocks. You're like, geez, maybe I could knock another 5 seconds. And you're like, I could actually. Well, then go do it. And then you'll probably realize you could knock another 5 seconds off. And I think as long as you have that mindset, as long as you have that story that's curious, that's willing to look, that's willing to break it down, that's willing to find a way, there's always a way.
So, Jerry, you've wrote another book. What was the inspiration behind writing it?
Inspiration was a guy in a train traveling down with my dad. One lady is sitting beside us. She tells, oh, I read your book and I loved it. And I'm sitting there and I'm getting all the credit and I'm loving it. And then the guy beside her, funny enough, happened to say, I read your book too. And I said to him, well, what did you think of it? Ready for more? And he said, oh, I didn't get out of it. And I kind of stuck for a second. But I believe that every feedback is opportunity. So now I said, tell me more. He said, I found the first books were great, but there was so much in them. And it was so dense. By the time it was over, I didn't even know where to start. So as we're getting off, going through the turnstiles in the train station, he said, if you're ever writing a book again, would you pick one thing? Just one thing. One thing that you think, if somebody could change that and only that, it would have a massive impact on their life. So he said, what is that one thing? I didn't know. So I took his number. I said, can I think about it for a while? And I'll ring you. So I thought about it for maybe a month. So I thought about the good brain axis, the microbiome. I talked about reticular activating system. I talked about the nervous system. I talked about all this. But the one thing that came to me was, it's the story we tell ourselves. It's that voice that's going on inside our head. So you can go to a strength and conditioning coaches for 5 hours a week. You can go to a therapist for 1 hour a week. But you are listening to yourself every minute of your life. Every second of your life, you are in contact with yourself. Nobody has a bigger impact on you than you. So I rang this guy a month later. I said, I'm going to write a book. It's going to focus on one thing, which is our inner story. It's going to explain to people what our inner voice is, why we have it, what forms it, the damage it can do, and how we can change it. And he said, if you write that book, I'll buy it. So I said, all right, let's go write the book. So this book is much more focused. And I wanted a book, the first books were Jerry the writer. But when you come to my show and you've seen it, Jerry's much more animated and short and the lessons are coming punchy. That's the word. I wanted people to get short, fast, bang, bang, bang. So when people were reading this book, I wanted them to feel like they're right in front of me and I'm delivering a message. So changed publisher, changed writing style, really challenged myself. Despite having the first two books be very successful, I said, I'm going to change it up completely now. I'm going to write a totally different book in a totally different way. I want it to be impactful. I want it to be punchy. And I want people to be able to put the book down and say, right, I'm going to make those three changes. So this is what the book is about. It's about our inner voice, the importance it is, what forms it. So everything from a childhood experience to something a parent said, something a teacher said, something we created. And if we don't listen to it and fact check it, it can run away with us.
I read your other book. I read Awaken Your Power Within. Yeah, is that one?
The first one, yeah.
I read that. I disagree with your man on the train. Okay, yeah, I thought it was brilliant. And I haven't got around to reading this yet, but I am going to read it. Hmm. About the voice in your head, where did that interest even come in for you? Because there is something that you speak about at your shows, and as I said, I've been to three or four of the shows at this time, but all of them are completely different, but you do seem to come around to that in all of them at some point of the show. Why does that interest you so much?
Because at one point in my life, I would have said to myself, what's wrong with you? Why can't you fix yourself? You're a burden to be around. You're miserable to be around. You're not as strong as your brothers. You're not as clever as your sisters. You're a fuck up. And that's probably what I would have spoke to myself. And then every time I failed, every time I went into a boxing ring, before the first bell, the only voice in my head was, you're probably going to fuck this up now. And I realized that it's not just your voice, but your inner voice is actually an extension of your deepest beliefs. And I realized that I was speaking to myself in such a horrible way. I was constantly telling myself what I couldn't do, constantly telling myself what I wasn't, constantly comparing myself to other people. And no matter how many people said to me, you're good or you're a good person, I'd say, no, I'm not. Don't I say that to be nice? I was speaking myself out of every opportunity. I was creating my own chaos. I was predicting my own failure. And I had this thing inside that was my inner critic. And I suddenly realized I can work with the greatest coaches in the world. But if I go into a boxing ring saying, I'm useless, I'm going to get stopped and my dad's going to be disappointed in me, I'm not going to win anything. I realized that as long as I said, I have depression, I'm a victim to it, it'll never change and you're just a waste of time. I'll never change anything. So I suddenly realized that I had to change that story. And I heard about this lady called Louise Hay, and I still use her every day. And she had a thing called 101 Power Thoughts. You're too young to remember the black Sony Walkman, but I had a black Sony Walkman and you had to buy a tape and put it in. And she started off and she had an American accent and she says, hi, I'm Louise Hay. Now take a deep breath and repeat after me. I am an amazing person. The life I dream of awaits me. And she's just saying these fucking things. I'm incredible. I'm invincible. I'm like, oh, fuck. And I realized two things. One was I couldn't say a nice thing about myself. And secondly, I thought it was wrong. I actually thought it was wrong to say I'm incredible. I'm unstoppable. I'm invincible. It took me months and months. And then one night falling to sleep, I could hear myself saying, I'm a kind, beautiful human being. I deserve all the love in the world. And I'm standing up for me. And not only could I say it, but I meant it. And from that moment, everything changed. I think if I'm jumping into an ice tank, but I'm saying this is a load of bollocks, so I'm not going to feel any different. I don't think it's going to make me feel any different. So I think for me, when I look back at all the stuff, like going to therapy, I could have easily said, this is a load of bollocks. Why is she asking me these stupid questions? This isn't going to make a blind bit of difference. But I had to stop and say, hold on, Jerry, this might make a difference. So for me, my own personal life, changing that inner story has probably been, if I was to pin it all back, that's the greatest gift I've given myself.
And it's all in there on how to change our inner story and change our inner voice, yeah?
Yeah,
the dreams.
It's in three sections. One is I am. So it's be careful of the I am statements. We say, I am anxious. I am depressed. I am an addict. And I've challenged that for years. Because when are you going to change that story? Because every time you relive that, every time you make that statement, you fire that circuitry in the brain, you create that belief about yourself. You become the same person. We got to break the habit of a personality. What is a personality? It is a fictional identity that we've become so familiar with. I'm not very clever. I'm not musical. Anyone can learn music. I'm not good at singing. Ed Sheeran, when he was 16, could not sing and was rejected by every music producer in the world. It's a good job he didn't give up then. So be careful the I am statements. I'm not afraid this and I'm not afraid that. There is nothing about you that can't be changed. Secondly, I can. You've got to figure out what we can do. And the most important thing we can do is change. We can wake up every morning and we can take a chance and a choice. We can wake up every morning and step into our power. We can. So you got to make these can statements. And then the will, life is not changed by what you know, it's changed by what you do. So what will you do? So people say, well, I could, or I should, or I should go to the gym, or I might do that. That's not going to change anything. So the book is broken down to three sections. And it also looks at like things like the voice of trauma. So it really helps us understand where did that voice come from. It might be trauma. It goes into detail in attachment. So there's three types of attachment, secure, insecure, and avoidant. Most people don't even know what type of attachment they are. But based on the environment you grew up in, based on your relationship with your parents, you are one of those three attachment styles. And they have a massive impact on your ability to engage with life. And then the other thing it looks at is how you communicate yourself to the world. So there's an instance in there where I talk about, you know, my mum used to leave me voice notes all the time and she'd always say, it's just me. And I said to her, stop saying that. Or she said, it's just me, don't worry, you don't need to ring me back. So we use these shrinking narratives. where we speak ourselves out of something, it's just me, or it doesn't matter, or someone, you know, does something that isn't fair, and you need to stand up. And I hope you don't mind, you say, no, I don't mind, it's okay. At sometimes, instead of speaking into our power, we retreat. So it's called shrinking narratives. We say things about ourselves that shrink to us. And the book starts off with the Marianne Williamson poem, "Our greatest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our greatest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us." And then she says, "There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around us." And a lot of us are playing ourselves down. I can't do that. That's not really me. I'm not very lucky. I can't make money. It's hard to have money. As long as you tell yourself that, that'll be your reality. So between Louise Hay and between Marianne Williamson and between, I've reprogrammed my belief. I'm very careful about the words I use. There's certain words I never use. I've just got rid of them. I've trained myself in a new way of thinking, and that story now changes your subconscious beliefs. And when you change your beliefs, watch out, the world is about to change.
It's powerful. And I can't wait to read it, Jerry.
Do you do audio books, Jerry?
All the books are on audio, and I've recorded them all myself, so
you'll hear. You know, we've had a guest on before who went for the audition to do the voice of their own audio book, and they got rejected.
What?
Like, Jerry, that's wrong, isn't it?
Imagine someone saying, "I like your story, I just don't like the way you tell it."
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I've been lucky. I've been allowed to record.
Did you have to audition to do the voice for your book? No, it's just you.
I didn't. Well, I kind of, it's part of the contract at the beginning, because I believe the first two books were so personal to me, it had to be me telling them.
Mm.
And somebody who just reading the book couldn't have conveyed that.
Yeah, exactly. And especially with the line of work you do, Jerry, it's, your seminars are different to other seminars. Like, I've been to talks and no one had me shadow boxing. You know what I mean? Yeah. Have you any of those you want to plug, any of them coming up?
No, I have a big event in Cork on the 21st of September. It's called Soul Sunday. The event is called Empower, and it's all around this developing an empowered mindset. That's 21st. I have an event on the 29th of June, and it's for anybody that's in the health and wellness area or the coaching business. And I'm going to look at three things. One is elevating self. How do I stay fit, strong, healthy? Elevating know-how. So we're going to pick a really important topic of science. We're going to do a deep dive into that and give everybody a whole new awareness of that. And then the last piece is elevating business. And that is, how do you build a successful, sustainable business? Because a lot of people are psychologists, yoga teachers, coaches like myself, but we're not trained in business. And I've had to make a lot of mistakes to build a business that's not a huge business, but it's a business, it's sustainable, it gives me a good lifestyle, and more importantly, it allows me to work only when I want. So that would be a big event. It's the 29th of June in Belenter House in Meath, and we're going to keep the numbers strictly limited, so get in fairly quick.
Brilliant.
Jerry, it's obviously inspiring talking to you, and thanks for coming in. And else, sorry.
No, that's it.
We'll wrap her up then, take us out.
Boom.
Siobhan. sorry. We'll go again. Take us out, Siobhan.
Boom.
Last week, we had a brilliant day down at TU Dublin. We're absolutely buzzing with how it all went. It was brilliant to help spread the word about a completely different way to get into college.
Yeah, big thanks to the National Tertiary Office for inviting us and everyone who came down. And especially to Maria, Grace and Tracy. Your stories were unreal and get proper light into what the tertiary degree programme is really like.
Yeah, no points needed and no college fees for the first 1 or 2 years in an ETB.
And the great thing is, applications on most of the tertiary bachelor's degrees are open all summer, so there's still loads of time to check it out and see what's on offer near you.
You'll find all the info at nto.ie. Go and have a look. Maybe send it to someone who needs to hear it, and we'll catch us in the next one.
Subscribe to this podcast for free on the Go Loud app.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your whip in it now. Fill your body up. Walk it hard and slow. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.
Go down. Go down. Go down. Go down.